Self-discovery rate at the discovery of self is but a show away. With over 1,800 shows and growing, we bring you those liberating stories that help you on your own life's journey. From every single topic you can think of, the only common denominator is authenticity and living in your meaningful purpose. Come and read our new ebook, plus see our discovery store and what wonderful tools we have for you. Do enjoy our shows and don't forget to share. Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening, everybody. Welcome back to another edition of Choose Positive Living. I'm your host, Sarah Troy, and I have a repeat guest, Colin Roos, today. We're going to be talking about ethnic origin foods, eating for that ethnicity, for our DNA. What if we are a mixed culture? What if we are of a different culture living in a Western society, a Western society in an Eastern culture? What dictates how we consume food, how we can digest it? Are there certain cultures that really should stay away from certain foods? We have such diversity out there today. Here in Vancouver, you can go to any restaurant from the world around, and it's wonderful to dive into those flavors and try new things. But can our DNA stomach take it? Can our ethnic origins take it? So we're going to be understanding a lot more about our cultural and genetic history as far as our food intake is and what we really can consume. So Colin is going to take a line this, and I'm going to ask you to bear with us today because we are going to go into a lot of detail today. We did a wonderful show where we really talked about her journey with what she does and really a lot of free information that came in the other show, and I really invite you to come and listen to that to know more about Colin herself. But today we really are going to go into that culture and genetic foods because it really does affect how we eat. So many people are having disorders today, and maybe it's the way they're eating and they're not designed to eat it that way. So let's go on this journey. Let's discover. You may have some aha moments along the line here. Maybe even have a pen and paper ready. And don't forget, she's there for you. You can contact her after the show and she'll answer any questions that you need because this is what she does and she can help you on your way. So welcome back to the show, Colin.
Thank you so much. I'm excited.
Yes, I mean, this is intriguing. Now, I'm intrigued with, you know, ancestry. I'm one of these days I'm actually going to do it because I want to know what my cross-culture DNA is. And I think more and more we're opening up to the fact that we are such a combination because of the, you know, world travel and people exiting countries. But what we eat is very much dictated from our origins. And that's really, truly fascinating. So you'd like to tell us a little more about that?
Absolutely. Now there's more and more words to even describe this, like eating by your ethnic origin, theory behind, you know, ancestral diets. There's even something called nutritional genomics now, which is exactly what we're going to talk about. Mm-hmm. So first, you know, it's just there are examples out there that we are familiar with. We've seen that and studies have been done with Pima Indians. When they were moved out of their original habitat and moved into Arizona, changed their diet, the obesity and levels of diabetes increased just exponentially. Mm-hmm. And they were studied a lot. So to just look at that connection, you know, and there's a lot that we can look at. Even our genetic makeup is so unique, like you said, because we come from so many different places. If you look at the Inuit of Alaska, Northern Canada, you're going to find people that are better capable of breaking down fats because that's what's been in their history. That's what their bodies, their genetic makeup has adapted to. If you bring them out, though, and start feeding them more processed sugar, more processed flours and grains, the genes are maladaptive for that. Mm-hmm. They don't work for that. And then when you see that such a high incidence of, like, coronary disease, they're connecting that to these genes that aren't digesting fat. well.
Ah.
So see what I mean? So sometimes you start with the disease and go, okay, this person has heart issues and is not digesting fat. So let's look at the diet. Let's look at the heritage. Where are they coming from? Maybe they don't have the northern Alaskan or Canada genes. And so maybe they need to keep fat out and really concentrate on healthy fats.
Yes.
On oils, you know, the plant oils, olive oil, you know, nuts and seeds, things like that. So that's just like one example of how we can connect the genes to the diet and to illness. But also, if you look around the world, you can see that lactose intolerance.
Yes.
So you can see how we are doing dairy. That is also genetically controlled. And so, naturally, if you... Go ahead.
No, it's just I'd like to kind of maybe take a few origins and kind of look at the diet of each of those origins as to what would be a typical diet. So, you know, I'm British and we have quite a starchy type diet. You know, a lot of, well, there's obviously fried fish and chips, but we're not too fried on other things. You know, meat and potatoes, our veggies, we love that. But it is kind of quite a starchy type diet. So that compared with what other country would be in sync as a cross diet, you know, if common denominators here of which countries that may be are, you know, on the same thread.
Okay, so when I think of European, also I am going to bring this up, but also we start looking at how your food is prepared.
Mm-hmm.
Because there's those starches and there's more grains. However, there's not like, say, corn and beans, where Latin Americans have the corn and beans. But how the Europeans can deal with starches more is if you're fermenting. If you are going back to, again, how your ancestors prepared these foods, okay?
Mm-hmm.
So more fermentation is going to ease your, it's going to give you more of ability to digest grain. Whereas Latin Americans, you can look at the opposite. They have much more corn and beans in the diet, but lot less rice and wheat. And so those are the things that they're going to be more sensitive to. And again, they have different ways of preparing food, too.
Right.
So you can look at these kind of contrasts between different cultures, and it's not just the food. It starts going back to how did they prepare the food to make it really perfect, a perfect fit for your genes.
Yeah.
You see what I'm saying?
Well, I mean, we're North America, I mean, England and good parts of Europe, we're very potato-based. You know, kind of is our main starch, isn't it? Potato and breads would be the heavy starches for us. Whereas in Latin America, you do not see too much on the potato or even on the bread side of things. So is this because the wheat grain as opposed to the bean?
Yes, and also when you're looking at genes again, and there's a lot less fruit, and I mean now there's more fruit and raw vegetables,
mm-hmm.
but again with the northern populations they had less fruit and less raw vegetables, where Latin Americans had more of that.
Right.
So again, you're a different kind of starch. It's a different kind of process. I mean, of turning starch into sugar.
Yeah.
Or fructose into sugar,
mm-hmm.
you know, for use in the body. So the rice and beans, I would actually say the beans and corn of the Latin Americans, and they had some more fruit, but the European and up north had so much less fruit
yeah.
that but to me, there wasn't like this competition.
Mm-hmm.
The body was like, okay, this is where I'm going to get my sugars from. This is where I'm going to get my glucose. And so it adapted, broke that down in a, you know, slower forms. And also, again, with preparation, you're breaking things down in ways that keep the blood glucose lower.
Right. I mean, you know, like, you know, in England, especially, you know, jam on toast. You know, we didn't eat a lot of fresh fruit, as I remember, but we ate a lot of cooked fruit, you know, in the pies,
right,
in the other, you know, containers,
right,
of type things. And, you know, and a lot of stew type fruits, a lot of canned, canning type fruits, you know, they would take fruit season and, you know, can them for the winter. But a lot of the fruit that I remember would be stuff that was baked or cooked and prepared in that way, either jams or pies or something along that line.
Right, exactly. And so then, you know, when you're cooking it, you're breaking it down, you're making it more easily digested. And you can, hopefully there's less of it. When it's processed from your own garden and you're canning and you're making your pie, that's going to be better,
yeah,
than some of the processed food that we can buy on the shelves. That's the big thing when you look at Pima Indians, when you look at Asians, who, when they migrated to the North America and Europe, you see more breast cancer and prostate cancer.
Mm.
And they're talking, the research is really feeling that it's as processed foods.
Yeah.
You know, way too much processed food, processed grains, processed sugars.
Have you seen the sugar movie? There's a brilliant movie. Yeah, the one with the Australian that came over to North America and over, I think, 6 weeks, kind of drank the lattes and ate the American diet, only to put on 15 pounds and then start having his liver break down, various other part of his organs go into distress, and then take 2 months of recovery to get his body back into sync again. So, and that was just 6 weeks of the American diet because of all the sugar content that's in everything. It's a very good movie.
Right.
You know, it's a sugar wake-up call for sure. But, you know, that when you're talking about those fresh fruits, you know, some people, I can't eat a lot of fresh fruit at one time. You know, I can't digest it that quickly, right? Right. Because it's delicious to eat a whole bowl of cherries.
Right.
But, you know, your stomach's not going to particularly like that.
No, not at all. There are people that are talking about juicing,
yes,
and that it's an evolutionary case, you know, against juicing. I actually think that we start looking at fruit and juicing kind of the same way. It should be later in the day instead of in the beginning of the day, and a lot less. That we don't need fruit every single day.
Oh, that's interesting.
If we're looking for vitamin C, that's usually what people think of when they think of fruit. There's so many vegetables that are very, very rich in vitamin C.
Mm-hmm.
So juicing and can really, if you go to vegetables, can give you so much more. You can get a lot more minerals that way, and you can get your vitamin C. And so this is, I mean, that, again, has a genetic component, because once upon a time, we could synthesize our vitamin C. And then our genes changed as fruit and vegetables became more available. We lost the ability to synthesize vitamin C inside our bodies.
That's interesting.
However, and this is the case of some mammals, too, like guinea pigs, you know. But what happened is we had another chemical that kind of stepped up the needs of vitamin C as an antioxidant, which is uric acid. But that cannot handle high levels of fructose. So now it's an overload of fructose. I mean, fructose you know, high fructose corn syrup.
Yeah.
That in and of itself is so hard on our bodies.
And well, you know, that's also the you know, in the sugar movie, they talked about fructose, you know, people thinking it's better than sugar. And it's sugar. And it's going to do the same thing to the body. Yeah.
Exactly. It's sugar and it's inflammatory.
Yes.
You know, to our brains, to our guts, to so much. I mean, to our whole body. And so this is more of a reason to keep fruit more at a minimum. And then think about seasonal again. If you can start eating your fruit seasonally, that's something that we've gone away from because of the availability in supermarkets, you know, when everything's out there. But when you are talking about eating for what you are best adapted for, eating seasonally is a really good piece of that puzzle.
Right. And, you know, getting back to juicing, at one point I was a heavy juicer and I loved it. It's like nectar drinking that, you know, forget about the alcohol, coffee or anything else. It really is, you know, oh, God's juice. But I never did pure fruit. You know, I had carrots and apples and ginger, maybe some spinach and apple or maybe some other fruit in there. I always mixed the veggies and the fruit together. Was that good or bad? Tasted good, but was good or bad for the body?
I think that is actually better for the body.
Mm-hmm.
There's the, you know, I do. There, you know, you can look at things like red bell peppers, and they have three times as much vitamin C as a green bell pepper. But those are far more more vitamin C than an orange.
Ah.
So now, you know, you can start taking these and you get minerals and you don't get all of the sugar that would be in an orange in a bell pepper.
Right.
So we do break it down and we are breaking it down to sugar, no matter how we look at it, but it's a matter of time too. So I do feel like, especially when we're compromised in certain areas or things like adrenal fatigue or thyroid issues, then there's a lot of reasons why juicing can be really good, because it does lessen the work our body has to do to get those nutrients.
Yeah, I can't eat fruit too much in it in its kind of rough, raw state, but I can juice it. Like, actually, not taken. My morning ritual was a Greek yogurt in a blender, along with berries, blueberries, strawberries, whatever seasonal, a banana, and cashew milk, because I can't take milk.
Mm.
And having that as a shake, and that's my breakfast every morning, which I love. Now, I don't know, is that too much fruit to have in the morning, or does the milk break it down on the yogurt? And then I was told the other day you shouldn't put yogurt with fruit, which is confusing.
It is. I would take the banana out, or, you know, limit it to a very small amount, because that is a big wallop of sugar right there.
Right.
And then you're using cashew milk, so there is a difference when you're talking about dairy milk from a cow or goat or sheep versus a plant.
Right.
There is a big difference there. So when you're talking about dairy from an animal and fruit, there is the potential of fermentation of this. You know, if you squeeze lemon in milk, it starts to curdle.
Right.
Right. You can make your own buttermilk. And that's what's happening. That's what they're talking about when they're talking about mixing foods like that.
Right.
That, you know, we want to break it down, and fermentation inside the gut it happens all the time, but it's happening because it's above and beyond the breakdown process. Like, we have to break it down, and sometimes we can't get it all the way broken down in the right particles that we need it to be, so it starts fermenting. But that's when, you know, when you see foods that give you a lot of gas, and especially smelly gas, your gut has gone more towards the fermentation and less to digestion.
Right.
And then you can't absorb those nutrients because you end up having, they just
right.
get wasted.
So yes to the yogurt in the fruit or no? Is that, you know, because yogurt is, you know,
I think it would say less fruit. You can keep the yogurt, especially Greek yogurt, because you're getting more protein. So
right.
that's slowing down the conversion into glucose.
Okay.
So Greek yogurt, I think, will work a lot better, and just limiting the fruit. Now, when you're adding berries, you're getting more fiber, the antioxidants, you're getting a big dollop of antioxidants.
Right.
So that's really good. The banana, to me, is a little bit on the too sugary, starchy side.
Okay. That's how I love to have my banana in the morning. It's the only time I have a banana. And it also kind of thickens it up, so the milkshake is a nice thick milkshake, so I'll have to maybe halve it or
right.
something.
Right,
but
exactly.
you know, it is interesting that you know, certain people can, oh, it's every day and it's my gut's great with it, and you try it and my gut goes no, and you know, we don't kind of take into consideration, you know, our origins. So even if you are you know, your origins, but now you're living in another country and you, you know, maybe have incorporated that country's diet, will your stomach eventually change over to the new diet, or are you always dictated by your origins?
Well, this is where I would say that eating for your epigenome, your epigenetics comes in, because we start changing.
Would you explain what epigenetics is for those that don't know?
Yes, absolutely. So we have genes, and then we have these patterns that build, we can call it just fluff, but it's methylation. It's methylated particles that attach to the gene. So there's this thing that attaches to the gene that tells it to be on or off. And these methylation patterns, this fluff that attaches to the gene, this can be affected by a lot of different things, by environmental factors, lifestyle factors. And this is where you see there's a lot of cancer genes that we carry that are turned off all the time.
Mm-hmm.
Now, they're in our bodies, but they're turned off. Now, if your great-great-grandfather was a farmer and using a lot of pesticides, that he got a certain cancer because of that, that was probably because that gene became turned on.
Mm.
Now, over the generations, there's a lot of different kinds of studies that have now shown this. But say 3 generations later, his grandson gets the same kind of cancer that his great-great-grandfather had. That gene can still be on.
Right.
Because the pattern got carried down. If that pattern for the fluff that's supposed to attach to it. Now, here's the really cool thing, though. We can start eating the foods that are the building blocks for that fluff, and that is one way we can start changing our heritage, you know, our subsequent generations.
Mm.
So there's 3 main things that are needed for those building blocks, and those are things like choline, betaine, and methionine, which are, and folate is very helpful. And so these things are found in like eggs and fish, elk, wheat, the bran of wheat, quinoa. And then you start looking at the vegetables like greens, like mustard greens, spinach,
kale.
Beet, kale, Swiss chard. These things can, because now you're providing those building blocks, you can start start changing what happens down the road with your DNA.
Mm-hmm.
So the DNA pattern itself can fluctuate very, and you know, this is why, like, evolution, they talk about, you know, long hair versus short hair or something like
right,
that.
Yeah.
You know, that takes a long time. But this other thing, this is a much shorter time frame that we're looking at. So in your lifetime, you basically can evolve and have something different come up for your children and their children, and the more that they eat. So that's, to me, that's what's really interesting and fun, is when you look at epigenetics, that you're thinking, oh, I can do something about this. And so, you know, even if there's the breast cancer gene, I can eat better to keep it turned off.
Right. Yeah, it's not inevitable. If you look at it as inevitable, right, you're generally going to switch it on, because your anxiety will do so.
Right.
So it is kind
right.
of, what can I do? I mean, like the B17 formula, which they call the cyanide vitamin,
right,
which is cashews and almonds and millet and all your berries apricot seeds and numerous things like that. You know, they're wonderful at kind of going after weak genes, aren't they? Weak cells. And kind of like a Pac-Man,
yes,
eating them up and, you know, plumping your body up. And it's just something that you can incorporate in your diet on a daily base. I can't eat almonds. I'm allergic to them. But I can eat cashews. So even if I'm having it in my cashew milk,
right,
or two or three cashews a day, it's, you're inserting in your body what it needs, you know, to fight any of that off that might be genetically in your origins.
Yes. And two things. There was a really interesting study done from World War II, where there was Dutch women that were starving. They were in really harsh conditions, winter conditions, and their babies were very, very low birth weight. Well, when those women were in health conditions, their babies were also low weight. And those mothers, when those babies became mothers, the same thing happened. So this is another example of, it's not just cancer or
right.
anything like that. It's all other things. And even low birth weight can be affected down the road. However, the more and more that you eat healthy and leaning towards what you're directed for, the more you overcome that.
Right. It's hard, isn't it, to find out kind of what to eat for your stomach. Like, you know, I'm British born, but I lived in South Africa for 11 years. I've been here in Canada for 37. I was married to an Oriental, eat a lot of Oriental food. But I have found that I am so much better in the vegetables, things like beets, mushrooms, greens,
mm-hmm.
Carrots, you know, all of these type of foods. I can eat day in and day out, no problem whatsoever. I'm not a full vegetarian yet, though I could quite happily just survive on vegetables and fish. And I find that my stomach is better on that. That there's certain foods that, even though you're from that origin of meat and potatoes, that I'm not digesting the meat unless it's cooked in a certain way. Right?
So, right.
You know, like in England,
exactly.
we cook things very well. I can digest that. If it's not cooked in that certain way, it's hard for me to digest. So you adapt to maybe a new diet, but you still got to keep within the frame of your origins.
Right. And think about, besides how it's prepared, where it's come and the quality.
Yes.
So one thing you brought up was the nuts.
Mm-hmm.
That you don't eat almonds, but you do eat cashews.
Mm-hmm.
Going to seeds, too,
yes,
is really good, because
yeah,
they're more
them.
Nutrient dense
yes.
than a seed. So even if you look at wild rice versus regular rice,
mm-hmm.
like brown rice or white rice, basmati, you are getting less of the starch, because wild rice is a seed, and you're getting at least 4 to 10 times the amount of nutrients.
Right.
In that.
Yes. And the texture is different, too.
I,
It's kind of chewier, right, isn't it? Which kind of makes it give it a kind mm-hmm. of a nice crunchiness. Yeah.
Right. And I'm seeing it sold more in, you know, big markets. And I think that's just wonderful to see.
Yes.
And looking again back at the seeds, you know, a lot of times I'm like, don't worry too much about the nuts. If you're allergic to them, go to the seeds.
Yeah.
What about pumpkin seeds, sesame seeds?
Eat them daily.
Yes,
I love them in my salad. I just throw all of that in my salad. I love it. You know, an avocado and my spinach salad and my seeds in there and maybe some cranberries. And I just throw everything in. And I actually then love to take a poached egg and put that in my salad as well. I'm a bit weird, but it's really good.
Exactly. And you can grind them up. There's different ways to incorporate these things. And I think when you look at a lot of indigenous recipes from way, way back, there's a lot more ingredients than we have now.
Yes.
Spices.
Yeah.
Ground up sesame seeds. You know, even fish sauce. Yeah. Asians, where the natural MSG was forming, you know, you are having things fermenting and marinating for a long time, seaweeds, and you get minerals from that, and then you have the proteins from fish, and then you put some of that in a dish with other vegetables and other, you know, more fish.
Yes.
And so when we look at these diets, I think that, you know, starting to include looking back into the nutrient dense things, whether it's you grind up sesame seeds and sprinkle that in there, or adding more spices, that can be really, really good.
Yeah.
And really, you know, bring it up a notch, the nutrient level of the food.
I mean,
and also those.
Yeah, go ahead. No, go ahead. Please finish.
I was just going to say that a lot of those spices helped with digestion.
Mm.
That we're not using anymore.
Ginger is wonderful, isn't it? You know,
ginger
and garlic is good for the blood, and you know, all of these type of things.
Yes,
and, you know, onions is a purifier. I mean, everything. You know, I mean, I love a stir fry. You have a melody of everything. It's a great little symphony going on in your mouth. It's wonderful. And then, like in the winter, I love to do slow cooking, and I throw all of my kidney beans and my beans and my pumpkin and you know, all of those beautiful, delicious things, and let them all stew together and make wonderful soup. And then, you know, either have it with a chunk of bread or with dumplings or something like that. And it's absolutely yummy. So there's so many ways that we can do things. And I think what it is be mindful. You may be even taking notes of when you eat, of how your stomach reacts. You know,
yes.
You know, a good old bowel movement will tell you whether something is working or not. You know, are you bloated? Or that kind of food wasn't good. Did it take a long time to digest? Is the esophagus in trouble? Are you feeling sluggish? You know, and pay attention to these foods. You may like them, but those foods may not like you.
Exactly. And the more that you can adjust and tweak your diet to find a new recipe that was your great-great-grandmother's that you go, oh, this really works for me, the more that you can listen and hear when your body is off.
Right.
And then you go have pizza and you go, oh, gosh, that didn't work.
Right, exactly. As I said, the taste buds love it, but the stomach doesn't. Now, Asian food here here, especially in Canada, we have beautiful Asian food, you know, all type of ethnic foods. And we're seeing such a fusion of Asian and Western foods today, which I think lightens up a lot of the Western heaviness. And it seems to be kind of fairly friendly for people to adapt to or to digest. Is this because it's kind of less heavy on the fats and the oils, or, you know, why would you say that Chinese food is generally kind of easier for people?
Well, one of the big things, I think, is that there's a lack of dairy.
Mm-hmm.
There is no cheese.
Right.
You know, there's no cheese. Like, that in itself, I think, is a really big plus.
Right.
You know, that when I mentioned that it's genetically controlled, naturally, we produce less enzymes as we get older to break it down.
Mm-hmm.
So worldwide, 50% of the pop, any, you know, at any given time, 50% population is lactose intolerant.
Right. Because that's interesting. That's a big statistic.
Gene. Right.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's not, so you might be in a group that can handle it. But if you look at the most people, and especially as you get older, it will be time to back off. It will be time to limit that. And then I think the Asian foods are, that to me is one of the big, big things. And there's so much cooked vegetables.
Mm-hmm.
You see seaweed salads, but there isn't, we have an overabundance of the salad bar.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, that was not something that was in most, indigenous cultures.
Right.
I have a client, she's going to France, and that's where her grandmother is, you know. So yesterday we were going over all the dishes that she would be finding there. And right away she told me, so the salad, it's nothing like this salad. There's no lettuce in it.
Right.
It's vegetables that are kind of marinated together. There's tomatoes. There might be some sheep feta or goat feta. But there's no lettuce.
Right.
And the smaller portion, too. So we talked about, okay,
yes.
So she's thinking about, you know, a half a cup of this salad. And I'm like, oh, that's perfect. That's perfect.
Yeah. And the thing is, if you look at the French, very little obesity over there whatsoever. You know, they love their pastries. They love their desserts. But the big word there is always moderation, isn't it? They'll eat everything over a space of time and small amounts rather than this gluttonous high, you know, mile high plate that we see in North America.
Yeah, I had a friend that said, you would just not believe the desserts. They only take like one bite.
I know.
You go to a pastry shop, it's so small, you know, and we end up thinking about this lack. There's
yeah.
a lack, you know, and that I have so many clients when we're talking about food, that ends up being a big issue.
Mm-hmm.
Because I'm not saying you can't eat, but let's find variety.
Yeah.
Let's listen to the body and see how you're doing with that. And then, you know, pause before you eat something else.
Right.
You don't have, you know, if you're eating several times a day, there should not be lack.
Right.
So many people don't eat, like they don't eat breakfast or they, you know, I met somebody at 10 o'clock. It was 5 o'clock at night. That was the only meal they had so far.
Mm-hmm.
And they weren't going to eat until 7 dinner. And I'm like, are you serious? This is not how our bodies should, you know, they're not adapted to be like that.
Right.
So
it needs little fuel,
that,
small fuels of food that through the day.
Right. Grazing is optimal. You know, that is great.
Well,
grazing,
you just have to look at the big animals, right? You know, 300 or 400 pounds,
right.
Pure muscle, pure vegan. They don't sit down to a big, huge meal, you know, give me the field all at once. They just graze through the day. And slowly
right.
digest it as they go. Get a little peckish back to the grazing. And off they go again. And we have become very, this thing about, you know, I need this big meal, I need this big. Our bodies, I think, never mind the obesity, but I think that it's, I think we put our bodies through too much stress with the eating at too much at one time. Because now you're asking your body to digest this up to an optimum thing, and it's like, slow down, I can only die as fast as I can, you know.
Right. And even again, looking at other cultures that fermented or soured food, like the Ethiopians that had the injera, I'm not sure how to pronounce the name of that bread.
Right.
So they have a grain, and it's mainly teff, it's not wheat, that is soured. So or there's kefir, there's, you know, dairy that has been fermented, even the yogurts, and those are accompaniments to the dish.
Mm-hmm.
You put a teaspoon or so on, you know, with your dish. They're flavorings.
Yeah.
I, you know, even with peaches are in season in Colorado right now, so that was something that we focused on at our lunch last week. But somebody brought a peach salsa that they had fermented. And so they fermented other vegetables with the peaches, and it was very savory and really yummy.
Yes.
I mean, it was so yummy. But again, we end up thinking that you're going to eat, I mean, even salsa people get so crazy with.
Right.
You know, a bowl of salsa. No, we're supposed to have these things as accompaniment.
Right.
Accompaniment.
Yes. Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Yes.
So that they add flavor, and you are adding enzymes. You're adding things that will help digest and break down your food so you can readily absorb those nutrients.
And
that besides just portion size.
True, yes. You know, I have, you know, I mean, I'm 62, you know, 63, and have had some stomach issues in the past, and I have noticed how my diet has completely changed, and just things I just can't eat anymore. And, and you know, the kind of foods that I really do like. I mean, I'm a stew type person. I am a sauce soupy type person. I love things that, you know, have been cooked down. My son makes this amazing root vegetable salad, which is absolutely delicious.
Mm.
His sister is vegan, his girlfriend is vegetarian, so he does this kind of cross thing. And whenever I have, you know, a vegan or vegetarian meal, I don't miss meat at all, because you can get such wonderful textures from mushrooms and from other foods, the flavors that build on each other. You know, it's I absolutely love that. And I can't sit down to a big raw thing. I can't sit down to, you know, the big mass burger, not without paying a price for it. And so the thing is, we do have choice today. It doesn't matter what your origins are or how your body's going to digest the food. You don't have to go out and eat that food or eat at that restaurant that only serves that food that your body doesn't like. We have so much choice today that, you know, we need to step outside of our, maybe our zone, maybe other ethnic type foods, because of the process is better for us as we get older.
Absolutely. And I do think it's stepping outside the comfort zone. I'm challenging my regulars to think about liver in a different way. Because liver can be something that's really good. Again, if you're looking at nutrient-dense foods, and if you're looking at something like food, and eating to improve mood, liver can be a really good idea. There's so many people that have never even tried liver, and they'll say, ew. And I'm like, where did you get that from?
Yeah, I grew up with liver done in onions and gravy, with mashed potatoes and vegetables. In fact, when I was pregnant with my son, I craved that. Absolutely craved
it. Perfect.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. The iron, all the minerals that are in that. That is just superb. And so that's one of the things I brought up this last week is, let's just start thinking how to get out of the box.
Mm-hmm.
Like, where are we really developing our ideas of what is going to taste good or not?
Right.
And so, yeah, trying a new restaurant and then saying, okay, can I make this at home? Can I make it even better? Can I make it with ingredients that I know will really work for me?
Yeah.
And that really steps it up.
Well, I mean, again, it's like vegan food. If you took vegan food 20 years ago, you know, everybody thought that it's just, you know, a few vegetables on a plate you're chasing around. You look at some of the vegan menus today, the dishes. They are absolutely delectable. And even if you made a dish as a side dish to your meat, and kind of slowly introduced it, or, you know, had a vegetarian or vegan two or three times a week, you know, it's so good on your body. And the thing is, it's just been adventurous. You can Google it today. You know, I've done shows on vegan and vegetarianism. You've shared things as well. Mm-hmm. The whole thing is that if you want to explore and understand how to put things together, it's there at reach. And I think another thing is we need to get right. back into cooking at home and making it maybe yes. a family thing, right? You know, like everybody yes. gets to do something. And this is a dish, the family dinner that we've all paired, we've all had a part in. And I think that also helps not only with the appreciation, but I think that helps with the digestion of the food.
Right. And the more you start cooking now, one of the things that I am always doing is tweaking somebody's diet to include more things, because I think the Western idea gets really puts us in a rut.
Yes.
Where we think of, okay, there's spaghetti, there's steak, there's
burgers.
Taco night.
Yeah.
And and I'm like, oh, okay, I don't have any of those days in my week.
Right, exactly. Exactly.
Going a raw food day, or this is where I also think like juicing, mm-hmm. You know, we were talking about this and having a raw food day or a juicing day a week,
mm-hmm.
that's good to give your system, your liver a rest and to, you know, get everything working optimally.
Yeah. I mean, it's so, kind of a cleanse in a way too, isn't it?
Right. Absolutely.
Yeah.
So thinking about, you know, new foods and new food groups and having, you know, one day that's a raw food day, one day that, you know, there's no dairy, and exploring. It's so easy, like you said, though, to even go to the web and Google vegan things with sweet potatoes.
Right. Oh,
so,
yeah.
I mean, you can pick an ingredient even.
Yes.
And that
goes back to your local thing. Okay, you know, right now it's corn is in play, as long as it's organic and not pesticide corn, or you know, or the yams are in play, or this is in play. Let's get a lot of it and let's explore what dishes we can make. Remember, you can always freeze dishes too.
Right, right. And right now, like, zucchini is in season where I'm at,
right.
and that is a wonderful squash to have.
It's one of my favorites.
And like, you can cook it, you can have it, like when you mentioned the chopped salad yesterday, I had that with kohlrabi. It was yellow summer squash and a balsamic dressing on it with hemp hearts and sesame seeds. Again, when you start mixing seeds and greens, you get all the amino acids that you could possibly need.
Right.
So it's a complete protein. It's protein.
Right.
Right there.
I cook that
you
a
know?
Lot I'm on a pasta dish phase at the point. I go crazy for a dish for a while and then change it. And it is big mm-hmm. chunky mushrooms, onions, garlic, a zucchini, spinach, done in a kind of a creamy mushroom sauce, you know, over some pasta. And I that dish. Mushrooms. I adore mushrooms. I can eat any kind of mushroom you want to give me. I love them. What are the nutrient values to mushrooms?
Oh, they're awesome. And I do think that this is one of those things that as we get older, we need more because they're cleansing.
Okay.
Yes, and they're cleansing, but they also help your blood to have more oxygen carrying capacity.
Yes.
So good for athletes.
Mm-hmm.
But as you are getting older, your immune system, really good for the immune system. The beta glycan in them is just awesome. So to me, they're one of those things as we get older, which totally makes sense. I mean, how many kids do you know that like mushrooms? It
yeah.
seems to be kind of an acquired taste, right?
Right, exactly. Yeah, I love making this warm mushroom salad where I use the kind of the oyster mushroom, portobello mushroom, and what is that stringy type mushroom? What's it called?
There's a lion's mane.
It looks like a, you know, little
oyster.
Tentacles going on in. But I like to saute them in garlic butter very low. It comes, you know, they all become kind of nice and juicy.
Mm.
And then
Yum.
I actually then throw that into a bed of butter lettuce. And you just toss the lettuce into that, and then a little grated Parmesan cheese over the top, and it's a wonderful appetizer to start off with, and it's really yummy. So.
Oh, that, yeah. And then the minerals that you have in mushrooms, you have a lot of the selenium, which is great as we're getting older because it's helping our immune system be strong, preventing cancer. So, and I could not say enough about mushrooms.
Yes, no.
And I think it's great as we get older to have more of them.
Well, I'm pleased to hear that, you know, mushrooms are my staple diet. You know, I'm always make sure I have that. Now, there's one thing I do want to hit on because it's an important one. And that is alcohol. And there are just some people who can't take alcohol. Orientals, not good with alcohol. You know, I have 3 half Oriental children. My ex was Chinese. And it's, alcohol is something that you either can or you can't take. And it's very interesting to see how it affects people, not just kind of either the emotionally, but going red in the face, or just, you know, it taking a long time for it to disperse. Is this very much ethnically based?
Absolutely. It's the genes, and it's actually a two-part thing, because if you look at American Indians and Asians, you'll see that it's not just alcohol intolerance, where the body has a inability to break it down, but it's other pieces of that process. So in Asians, they're missing 2 pieces of the puzzle, so the toxins can build up quickly because they're not getting flushed out and cause a lot of damage.
Right.
So the way that we break it down is a problem, and genetically controlled. And once that is in our bodies, if your body is having a hard time breaking it down and moving it out, it can mess up that whole methylation process that I was talking about in the epigenetics. So basically, you're making your body is getting worse over time the more alcohol that you drink, and the more it's, you know, if your grandmother was a drinker and, you know, in your history.
Yes.
Because of the damage it's doing to your genes.
I mean, you look at certain European, and, you know, especially the Latin, or, you know, the warm countries, you know, lots of wine every day. That is just kind of part of their food source, and it's very good for them. Where other people drinking wine, you know, that fermentation is no good. I was brought up on scotch, and I'm fine with scotch. I'm fine with hard tack.
Absolutely.
But I'm very susceptible to the wines and certainly any of the sweet alcohols. So again, it's kind of, if you are going to drink, know which alcohol is friendlier for you. And again, moderation, right?
Absolutely. And I mean, I think that's wonderful, because that just, to me, the whiskeys and scotch, you have the lowest glycemic index there.
Right.
The lowest. And you are going to have the hardest time with things like beer and wine. And the, like you said, really sweet.
Yes.
Ooh.
Yeah.
It's just overwhelming to your system, even.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, if I drink a sweet drink, I'll get like a blazing headache straight away. You know, just ugh.
Right.
You know?
Right.
I like a good wine. Right. And actually, it's funny. I've been introduced to some vegan wines, and I'm pleasantly surprised how I can drink that without any problem whatsoever. There's one with, a donkey on it or something, or some sort of horse on it, and it's red something. And because my daughter is vegan and she likes wine, and I find it so different, whereas some wines I drink, immediately the acidic level in my body comes up. And this vegan type wine, it isn't in there. And I didn't know that in wines they kind of put fish sauce or fish something in it, which is interesting. So, you know, we live and learn as we go, right? So.
Yes, absolutely. And again, that to me goes right back to food preparation.
Yes.
You know, it's probably a younger wine, is you don't have to have as much salt in there and the things that preserve it. I would think that would be better on your,
right?
You know, to prevent headaches and things like that too.
Now, if you're a person that can't eat a lot of meat anymore, like again, British meat in the pies, meat in the stews, the meat's really broken. But like a slab of steak in front of you as you get older, it's harder to digest. Would you say kind of going then more to eating eggs? Obviously, spinach and things like this are great. Or even the fish, because I have noticed I'm now steering more to an egg now and again, and most certainly preferring fish over meat. Is this something to do with age and as your body breaks down?
Absolutely. I would say fish and seafood if you can get good seafood, but then eggs because you can get local.
Right.
So, you know, if you have a base of you're eating eggs a few times a week, that's good. And then fish maybe a couple times a week. And then any other meat, that would be just once a week.
Right. Exactly.
So then, you know, and eggs are one of the things that are very rich in that choline, which is, again, really good at keeping your DNA happy.
Right. Now, you know, for vegans, a lot of argument for that is because they're not eating meat or fish or any dairy, they're going to be lacking in various proteins and other nutrients. But you can get your proteins very sustainable for the body in other ways, can't you?
Yes. Like we said, when you're mixing greens and seeds, you are getting plenty of complete protein.
Right.
And so, again, with variety, looking at variety, I work with vegans all the time, and it's just more variety. Get more variety.
Yes.
And it's not that hard. Once you start really branching out, it isn't that bad. And there is, I have a vegan that became a vegan. It's a new word I heard. I saw it somewhere, and it's the vegans who only eat eggs as,
all right, okay.
As their, as yeah, a, instead of V-E-G-A-N, it's V-E-G-G-A-N.
Oh, okay, that's interesting. That is interesting, yeah, because, you know, my daughter will not touch anything now whatsoever. She's become very much in that, but her boyfriend's mom has this kind of farm, and they get these beautiful duck eggs, so they give them to me, and they're absolutely delicious, so rich and wonderful, and you know, again, poaching that and putting that in my salad, yum, you know, really yummy. And the other thing is that if somebody is wanting to become vegan or vegetarian through, you know, because of the ethical way meat is produced today, which is very, very valid. And they have been a heavy meat eater. Is it something that they should do gradually, or should they introduce a lot of other type of protein in their body as they're transitioning?
Yes. Everybody I work with, the first two times I meet with them, I tell them, we're not telling you what not to eat. What we're doing is we're giving you new foods to add in.
Right.
And naturally, these other foods are going to start falling away because you're going to start feeling so good.
Mm-hmm.
So in the beginning, all you want to do is replace. I mean, you're replacing some foods because you're trying a new breakfast, trying a new, you know, with you, the duck egg in a salad, duck egg savory, a new way to get protein. It doesn't have to be eggs for breakfast.
Right.
Now you had protein. And duck eggs and salad, that right there, that's perfect thing.
Yeah.
Because the duck eggs are also adding alkaline to your body.
Right.
So the meat, especially red meat, if you've been a big red meat, there's a potential for high acidity, which means more inflammation. So the joints, especially leading to joint pain. So you want to replace healthy oils that are going to, like plant oils, like flaxseed oil, hemp oil. That's what you want to start using and actually start supplementing in your diet.
Yes.
Borage, currant seed oil, you know, these things that, primrose oil, all kinds of these oils that you can have in a supplement. When somebody is going off meat, we want to support and nourish things like the joints.
Yes.
And we want to reduce inflammation. So it's a good idea to get some supplemental oils on board.
What about omega oils, like omega-3 and omega-6 and 9?
Yeah, so hemp is a perfect balance.
Right.
It's got 3, 6, and 9, a perfect balance. Perfect ratio that we need.
And, of course, you've got to be careful that it is, you know, proper prepared organic hemp. Don't just go buy it from your local grocery store.
Exactly. Yes, you do. It makes a big difference.
Yeah.
And especially when it comes to something like hemp, because hemp is a natural cleaning plant. It cleans the soil that it grows from.
Mm.
It will take toxins out of the soil. So they've used it in places they're trying up radiation in the soil.
Right.
They've used hemp as a cleanup plant. So yes, you want to be organic. The more you know about where your food comes from, the better, hands down.
Yes, exactly. So it really is a question of mindful eating, isn't it? Is that, you know, as I said, my children are Chinese and English. And it's funny because my son, I probably think, cooks more to the English background. My other daughter, I think, is more into the Oriental type foods. And so it's a combination of both. But when you look at it, the Oriental do very little raw, as you said. You know, they'll cook the vegetables, but obviously less than the British will, because it's woked just enough to kind of still hold some firmness and crunchiness, cooked enough to be digestible. And I think this is, I think, the reason why Western and Asian has become such a great fusion, is that it does kind of complement, isn't it, that Western maybe cooking to a little less cooking, but cooking enough to be digestible.
Yes, absolutely. Totally agree. Exactly. Let's come to a middle place. We don't have to live at the salad bar.
Right.
We can just a couple days, you know, a couple days a week. It doesn't have to be every single day. And we don't have to have, just stews.
Right.
Some stews are really good. But you start mixing and matching again.
Yeah,
so
exactly.
Bring it, you know, to this middle place.
Right.
The middle road.
And, you know, stir fries are wonderful. Even kind of roasting your vegetables with track and some nice oil and a little spice in the oven is delicious. I mean, it's also get spicy, right? You know, explore the spices to lift up those flavors and to add, you know, some other nutrients, because there's certain spices that will bring out the nutrient in the ingredient out even more.
And not only that, I mean, you have spices that aid in digestion, that prevent inflammation, that are power packed with nutrients. And they also can change the food that it's with. When you're eating radishes, a lot of people don't, that's another food that a lot of people like. It's sharp, it's bitter. And you put that with spices and some fat, an oil, totally can change that.
Yeah.
I made a pesto dish and then put that on crackers with little pieces of fresh radish. And they were like, oh, that's radish?
Yeah.
But the pesto had the oils, and it can calm that down. So when we're adding spices, when we're adding, again, 1 tablespoon of fermented veggies to sweet potatoes, we are making it more digestible, much more easily assimilated.
Right.
Into our body.
Yeah. Because I think, you know, as a whole, because we eat so much, because we're eating foods that aren't designed for us, because we're maybe even eating a lot of GMO food with a lot of chemical on it, you know, our bodies are having such a hard time digesting. And we're seeing so many people, not just with the diabetes, but esophagus problems, you know, stomach gastric problems. And really, they're not kind of paying attention. It is what you eat. And are you eating for your DNA? Are you eating for your origins? Are you eating for your body type? Don't just go and eat because everybody else is eating the same. You've got to be in tune with your body. And of course, that's where you step in. You help people discover what their body needs to get on a right lifestyle diet which is not a diet, a lifestyle way of eating, friendly for your body, that gives you that versatility and can really combat any of those health issues that we're either in the middle of or about to step into.
Absolutely. And one of the biggest things that I see is looking at especially young women and their cycle, that these days, that is a really good indication of the status, the health status of your body. How balanced are you? How is your body working naturally? Mm-hmm. Do you have a normal cycle? That is one of the biggest things I can change. This young gal, one thing. We changed one simple thing, molasses into her diet. Ah. She started having her cycle again. After almost a year of not having it.
So would you also say that, you know, not just the question of not having a cycle, but even the going through the cycle because it changes the body, that you could help that through what we eat?
Yes. Yes, absolutely. Because there is the way we're holding on to weight has a lot to do with hormones. Sleeping has a lot to do with biological rhythms, whether you're sleeping well or not. Other things can be tied into a woman's cycle and how balanced it is. And what you eat, everything to do with that.
Is it also when you eat?
Yes.
You know, because
that's chrononutrition.
Right, right. Okay, so because eating a meal very late at night and then going to bed is not necessarily a good idea. But however, if you look at the cultures, European cultures, they'll have a big lunch and go and have a siesta. So that is a little mixed messaging.
And it depends on your body type, too.
Right.
If you're looking at preventing diabetes, I consider myself semi-pre-diabetic, only because I had gestational diabetes. I do need to eat something before bed because when I sleep, I want to sleep soundly and I want to sleep for a good 7 hours and my body will be hungry and it will wake up. My blood sugar will wake me up too early if I don't have the right things on board before I go to bed.
Right.
So, and that's not the case for everybody.
Yes.
So I really look at that too, that balance of morning and night. Are you sleeping well? Do you get up feeling like, I'm actually awake? And then what you eat at those times really makes a difference.
Right. Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Yeah, it's interesting.
Quality
that.
Of food.
Yeah, because we don't think about sleep and food. You know, I'm a terrible sleeper. And one doesn't associate it with the food. And I know if I eat very, very late, it's going to be a digestive problem for me when I go to sleep. So I actually eat anywhere between 5 and 6 at night, and I go to bed around 10. And then I don't eat until around 9 the next morning. And I seem to be okay with that. I might have a snack around 8 maybe. And I seem to be okay with that. But, you know, is it something that should I eat something before I go to bed? Or is that just purely more for the people with the diabetes? Or do you again have to pay attention to Colin and go, okay, I can't get through the night without, you know, some food, so I should have a little snack before I go to bed. And if so, what kind of snack should somebody have that's still digestible and kind of gives them that, you know, that body comfort for them to sleep well with?
Well, we are changing somebody to having, you know, the warm glass of milk. Instead of a warm glass of milk, having a warm glass of chai milk, cashew chai milk.
Right.
So put in something that you know is going to help digestion, some cardamom, and some nutmeg, which is calming to the nervous system. Mm-hmm. That's all that you would really need for you, because you are doing really well. And then that will help your nervous system to start calming down so that you can get a better night's sleep. You don't need a lot of food. But you can basically make, you know, a superfood comfort drink.
Right.
And I have a lot of clients doing that because they have a body type, you know, more like you and not like with me with the diabetes.
Yeah.
So you know, and that can really be helpful. Different things that calm the body down that are easy to digest. So I look at the nervous system support foods, which might be eating more savory whole oats because there's tryptophan, more seeds, again, because there's tryptophan, which converts to serotonin, which makes you feel all well and relaxed.
Right.
So looking at it, these things that can be easily digested, plant proteins in the evening, or even a comfort food. So I have a lady trying a lot right now, and she's doing oatmeal in the evenings.
Ah, yes.
Her little, you know, it's easy to have in a hotel room, and it helps her sleep. So no more oatmeal in the morning for her, just, you know, when she gets back to her room and she needs to settle down and go to sleep. You know, and she's saving enough room in her stomach to have that.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, no, I've done that, actually. I'm an oatmeal person in the winter. And,
you know,
I normally have that in the morning. But there have been some times where maybe I've gone out for lunch and had my main meal at lunch. And it's the evening, and I don't really want anything to eat. But I know I need to eat something because otherwise it's too long. And I'll have a bowl of oatmeal before I go to bed. And it's very comforting and very soothing. And,
Yeah.
And is it something you could have twice a day if you desired?
Right. Oh, absolutely. And when you're looking at the morning and the night, I do think how you sleep, getting those comfort foods on board, you can have a high plant protein pancake in the evening and toast it. And then in the morning, are you feeling awake when you get up? And that's when the spicy food, that's when sometimes the protein like eggs and salsa is our wake-up foods.
Right.
So you're just kind of switching or changing your perception about what is a breakfast food and what is a dinner food.
Mm-hmm.
And I look at more how is it supporting the body.
Right.
A comfort food when you are, especially when you're traveling and you're going, oh, so much going on in my head.
Yes.
I need to just rest.
Yeah.
Then that's comfort food. And comfort food can be something like oatmeal or a pancake.
Right.
Not
the candy bar, you know, because, you know, they're not the things that are going to give you that comfort. There may be comfort going into the mouth, but they're not giving comfort to the stomach.
Right, right. And a piece of toast with a nut butter.
Mm-hmm.
And that would get easily digested and be protein.
Yes.
With some minerals.
Yes, yes, yes. And that's actually something when we talked about breads before, this is something else I've noticed. I love bread. I'm from England, love bread. But I have noticed lately I cannot eat the grain bread anymore. I can eat naan bread or sourdough bread. And that seems to be okay. I can digest that. Other breads I can't. And I love actually kind of a piece of toast at night if I'm feeling a little hungry with peanut butter and jam. You know, just that little something before you go to bed, right? And or if you're wanting a snack through the day, you know, generally right next to me, I have a little bin of cashew nuts, some seeds, some peanut nuts, some apricots, some dried apple, because I'm actually better on the dry foods than I am on actually the raw food. So,
yes, more minerals, less sugar.
Right, exactly.
You get it.
Yeah. So it's
and the more, exactly, you did it. More experimentation, changing perception.
Yes.
And you can have those things and your body will be balanced, throughout the day.
Notice, you know, oh, I got a little low ebb. I go for these, you know, the dates, the this, the that, a few of each. I'm suddenly picked right up. I've got energy, but it's not what we call the hysterical energy, the sugar high energy. I'm not going to crash from this. You know, it's going to give me the energy I need to go through the next few hours. And again, each one of them has a nutrient in there that's good for my body. So it's not a guilty pleasure. It's a sensible pleasure.
Exactly. And people cutting down on, say, caffeine.
Yeah.
I was talking to a client about the 3 o'clock slump. And I was like, okay, instead of going for a coffee or energy drink, heaven forbid, you know, let's get a food in there. Your body wants energy.
Yeah.
Naturally, you get energy from food. Let's find some little snack that you can have at 3 o'clock.
Mm-hmm.
And that was like, oh, wow, okay.
Yes.
Starting that digestion process, getting some food on board, lifts up the energy.
Right.
And so it's just those tweaks to me. I just call them, you know, little tweaks, again, that support the body balanced way.
And you can carry around in your bag or whatever, a little Tupperware, a little Ziploc bag, you know, a few of those sesame seeds and nuts and you know, something else in there. You can make your own little mixture. And, you know, when you've got that little low slump, you know, just put a few of those in your mouth. And wherever you are, you can eat that.
Pumpkin seeds, you can toast them in a pan, and then you can make them spicy. You can add things like amino acid, which give you some more protein, even though pumpkin seeds have more protein per ounce than an animal
really?
Product
wow.
does.
Wow.
Yes,
wow.
They have 9 grams.
Wow.
So you're getting more protein. 1 ounce, you think of a shot glass or just a handful
yes.
in a bag. And I've done this for my son where, you know, I put a little oil in the pan, and if he wants some sweet, when they're nice and hot, I'll take them out of the pan and sprinkle some coconut sugar on there. And then he's got a sweet snack to snack
right.
on.
You know, something
or,
else,
you know.
Yeah, go ahead. I mean, making bars, right? Great idea, making your own bars.
Yes. You can sprout and soak and sprout nuts and seeds, then put them together and dehydrate them.
Mm-hmm.
I have a dehydrator, so I do that. I make a nut seed bark. However, I've seen people do it in the oven.
Yep.
The chia seeds have a lot of mucilage, so they stick things together, or grinding up flax seeds as part of your base.
Mm-hmm.
And then using, you know, whatever nuts and seeds work for you. Chia seeds, very anti-inflammatory. Pumpkin seeds, great for preventing prostate cancer, so really good for men.
Right.
Put those in there. Again, some more spices. Use spices, and you can put that just on parchment on tinfoil in the oven, very low heat, and dehydrate it that way, or in a dehydrator.
Right. Yeah. I mean, that's the thing, isn't it? I mean, like avocados. I mean, you can eat an avocado just on its own. You know, nothing with it. But, you know, as I said, I put it in my salad, which is my spinach, along with an egg and along with the pumpkin and the sesame seed. And, I mean, avocados have got so much nutrient in them, too. And there's so much you can do with an avocado.
Yeah. Going back to the healthy fats.
Yes.
Again, you're taking care of your genes when you're eating your oils and fats from nuts and from avocado,
right.
from seeds, then to me that's, you know, not only supplying all these minerals and nutrients that you need, but you're taking care of whatever genetic, you know, map you have.
Would you say that it would help people, the ancestral you know, gene thing, to actually find out where they come from, that actually might help them with their diet? Because if they might find, oh, you're 40% this culture or that culture, but you thought you were that, and that could actually explain a little more why your body prefers to eat in a different way.
I think there is something to that. Last night I was Googling some more stuff, and there is some companies out there that will do that.
Yes.
They charge a lot of money. It's thousands of dollars, but you actually pay for your own genetic testing, and then they design a diet plan for you.
Right. Yeah.
And I think that the thing is that you have to start really considering who you are and the environment you've grown up in.
Yes.
Because again, environmental factors, stress, lots of kinds of stress, whether it's physical, whether you're an athlete, whether it's trauma, these things are affecting your body.
Right.
And again, how you digest and metabolize and utilize food.
And
so
then,
on one hand, it can be one piece of the puzzle.
Right.
It's just one piece of the puzzle.
And, you know, the more puzzle pieces you put out there, the clearer you become. But a hell of a lot
right.
of it is, you know, having someone like you that can help somebody change things over, understand, you know, the changes that are needed. Even muscle testing food is good. All of these type of things that, you know, will help us get onto the right diet for our body that, you know, optimizes us and is paying attention just to your ethnic background or your environment, your stress level, the energy in which you eat food. Do you give it gratitude energy? Because it will change the structure of how you eat that food and digest it. But the other thing is eating gratitude, isn't it? That's really important. If we eat in gratitude, again, we change the way we digest the food and the energy of the food. So it's just be willing to be experimental and, you know, I've always eaten this way. Yeah, but look, you've got some problems. So clearly you'll not eat that way anymore. So it's, and also look at the beautiful foods we have on this earth. It's given us the gift of such everything we need and such diversity. And, you know, if you start exploring, integrating, you know, it just opens up your palate, you know, your stomach, everything. It just opens everything up. So, you know, just be adventurous, right?
Yeah, and I'm really appreciative that you said gratitude. Mm-hmm. Again, when it comes to mindful eating, when it comes to feeding your genes, it is about what's in front of you. How can you give gratitude to the food you have? How can you go out to really pay attention and get the best food for you? Go to a farmer's market and see what's being grown in your neighborhoods. That is just, and then you're paying it forward to these people who are doing the growing for you.
Right. Yeah, my son is about to open up his cafe deli, and it's called Humble Roots here in Maple Ridge in BC. He uses all locally sourced farmers. And seasonal fare, and he has right next to him a vegetable farm. So he is going to do his very, very best to use all the farmer stuff that were in his vicinity and in seasonal foods. And, you know, that is right there, you know, eating seasonally, eating locally, you know, less chemicals and preserving. He's going to do an awful great deal of canning his own food, you know, from that for the seasonal, but it's cooked with love. It'll be eaten with love. And that in itself becomes such something that feeds us from the inside out, not just the, you know, the substance, but the loving nutrition that you get from that love. Right.
I love it. Perfect.
Yeah.
Absolutely wonderful. Yeah. More sustainable. Right where you are. I even have a client who has autoimmune issues, and that is one of the things that we were bringing up this time, because it's how close can she get to her food and be grateful that she has this nourishment and support for her body?
Right.
Can start growing things herself.
Mm-hmm.
And just that started making her think, oh, I bet I know I can eat green beans if they come from my mom's garden.
Right.
What, you know, but nowhere else.
Yes.
Well, perfect. Let's get closer and closer to that.
Yes. There's a certain amount of pride, too, of eating something you've grown. You know, I grew this, you know.
Yeah.
I nurtured this and I grew this, and it tastes so much different because I've done it, right? And that's the thing.
Yes.
Yeah.
You can pick out more for, I was talking to somebody about, you know, let's start picking out what you're going to have next year.
Yes.
You know. And,
what can you grow next year? And it doesn't matter if you're in an apartment, because there's the vertical growing. There's many different ways to grow food now, and there's even indoor growing, and you not might be able to grow your entire grocery thing, but you can grow some spices, you can grow some herbs. There's lots of things that you can do. It's just being open to exploring. And there's a lot of people out there that have provided access and styles and things like this for you to do it. And, even just small things helps, right? So, my love, always a love to talk to you. I know I'm going to have you back on again. In fact, actually, I want to have you back on with lots down the road in the fall on a round table on food. And she's actually done about chakra eating, like eating the foods that match the chakras. So if your chakra is actually down, you could eat these various foods to bring your chakra energy back up. The two of you would make a great show. So we'll have that come back.
Wonderful.
Yeah, we'll do that in the fall. So something for you to look forward to, folks.
Okay.
But would you please tell everybody how they can get hold of you and what kind of services they offer them?
Yes, I do one-on-one counseling. I also have do talks for people. You can reach me by phone or email or my website. So it's, 970-61-1830 is phone. It's holisticnutritionfood.com. It's my website. And you can get me through there onto email. That I use Zoom, which is like Skype. So we have video chats and you can share screens. We can go over foods. I can muscle test afar. I don't have to be
right
in your presence to look at that. We're looking at balancing, finding a foundation of foods for you and treating illness, chronic illness, pain. I would say, I mean, I can never say it's one thing,
right?
But I do.
Right. It's well, and that's the thing is that in our body, there isn't just one thing to address. We have to address the whole.
Right.
You know, Western medicine addresses one thing. We need to address the system and understand why the system is not cohesively working. And that's when you can start breaking things down and going, okay, that element isn't working in your system. And you can only do that if you address the whole. So really important.
Exactly.
Right. So also
one step at a time.
Exactly. Be willing to take the time to go through it and realize this isn't a quick fix. This is a transition. But once you get to that transition and you're in that diet that suits you, you can go about having a great relationship with food again and not worrying about it, which is really important. So her Facebook is Holistic Nutrition LLC. And I'll give her a site again, holisticnutritionfood.com. Please do reach out to her. We all need that guidance and help initially to actually understand our bodies. It's how, you know, the process of going through into what is friendly for us so that we can have a better relationship with food. So please reach out to Colin and let her help her on her way. And as I said, she'll be back here in the fall with another show. But do listen to the previous show because I know that it's more journey and everything else that she does more in depth. And I know you'll be really intrigued to listen to that as well. You will find that here on this same show posting, or her last one was actually under the Eco Solutions and it's Healthy Eating with Colin Roos. So please do listen and tune in. And thank you so much, Colin, for being with us here again today.
Thank you so much. Very fun to be here.
And we learned a lot, and there's a lot more to read, to learn the stuff here on the thing that we have written down that's a little more. And as I said, any questions, reach out to her, because this is quite deep, quite complex, but it can be very, very simple when in the right hands with the right direction. So to everyone else out there, get out and enjoy and explore food. Maybe take some notes of what suits you and what doesn't, and be willing to let other people help you and guide you on the way. Do not be afraid to explore. Food is wonderful. Until next time, folks, bye for now.